Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. My name is Lauren Wells, here with my co-host, Chris Seveny. We're committed to providing you with the knowledge required to build wealth through real estate investing. Tired of consuming content about real estate? Stuck in analysis paralysis? Ready to do your first deal? As a member of our community, you will learn how to go from consuming content to taking that first step into the world of real estate investing. Our show is not about getting rich quick, but about providing you with the knowledge you need to take action. Join us as we speak with experienced investors who share action tips on how to escape the corporate world, start a thriving side hustle in the world of real estate, and go beyond your W-2 or 401k. My name is Lauren Wells, and I'm here today with my co-host, Chris Seveny, and our special guest, Tony Shackelford. Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast, where each week we will bring you education and information that will help you take your next step in building wealth through real estate. So on today's episode, we are interviewing our newest team member, Tony, who we have brought on as our marketing manager here at Seveny. And we want to talk about misconceptions of finance, how to get started in real estate with someone who just graduated college.
Hello, I'm Tony. I just graduated college in June and I started here in July last week.
So two whole weeks under her belt.
2 weeks, and I still don't know a lot. So this is good.
Well, we haven't given her the full fire hose yet, so no. She's fortunate, but I'm just glad I could have my Santa Barbara sisters on today for those watching in video. You know, we got Tony and Lauren all dressed in black. I feel kind of left out that I don't have my black shirt on.
We've been wearing the same color.
We have this whole week.
So as mentioned, Tony's recently graduated college, and we thought this would be a great episode to really discuss a lot of the misconceptions, because Lauren mentioned before the show, a lot of people probably before the age of 30 have been investing in a real estate market that has been just completely positive. And as we start to hit a little bit of potential rocky
footing,
yes, I was going to say turbulence. It's interesting to hear, get some of the thoughts from somebody who is brand new to the space. So Tony, of course, thank you for having us. So the first question I was just going to, again, open up right at you is, as somebody who's just out of school, when you hear the term real estate investing, like what's the first thing that pops in your head?
It's definitely not this. When I think of real estate, I think of like being a landlord and like renting your house out. How I lived in college when you just had like an agency that you like rent from. Or I think of HGTV, you're flipping houses. I know some people that flip houses personally too. Yeah. So when I think of real estate, it's definitely not like the deep depths of like mortgage notes, which I never heard of until Lauren actually called me.
Don't feel bad. I didn't hear about them till like 2016. So, which for me, I was still really old at that time. Still, first number was still a 4. So
about 20
twice,
years.
Yeah, ago. Basically, I was twice your age when I learned about them.
So I guess, Tony, when we met, when we were talking, like, I know you had mentioned, like, you had another friend who did work in real estate. When I reached out to you or when I was introduced to you about this position, like, what was your initial thought of, as far as like, what this was?
I was pretty intimidated at first. And I actually, the first thing I did was go to the podcast and I listened to an episode. I think it was your first episode where you got introduced. And I was like, okay, it's not that scary because everyone does seem like real people. Like you guys weren't, I don't know. I felt like even though I didn't know anything about it and I had to like interview with you, that I could quickly like learn a couple key things and you would like help me along the way. Yeah. Like talking to my friend that was in real estate, her dad is more of like construction type stuff, but even like she knew so much about this. So I was like, okay, like even though this, she's teaching me the broader part, it all kind of connects.
Yeah.
When you think or heard about like real estate investing, like landlords and HGTV, and again, as somebody who was a tenant in college, hopefully you weren't like me as a tenant in college. But when you hear the term like a real estate investor or a landlord, do you think that it's like something that's easy where people are making a lot of money, or just curious, like from a finance perspective, like, and was it something that when you graduated was ever interesting to you? Just out of curiosity.
Yes. I feel like my generation, especially like with social media and stuff, people make it seem super easy. They're like, oh, three easy steps to buy this house and rent it out to people. And it's like, I never knew how I would ever get my foot in the door to even begin real estate. So I was like, first of all, never, like, how would I be able to just buy a house? How is that one of the simple steps? So it's like having you guys teach me like a different path of getting into it was like something I never thought would happen, because I feel like my generation is very like, this is super easy. You just have to do this, this, and this. And it's things that like don't really make sense for everyone unless you already have like a bunch of money.
Well, Chris, you and I talk about this a lot. I think you sent me an article about someone who went from like 7 doors to like 70 doors on BiggerPockets. I think you may have seen a post or something. Mm-hmm. And I think my first comment was, yes, but what are they paying in debt on that? You're right. I am not of your generation, but now I feel like the old one on the podcast. But I do know that there are a lot of social media influencers that do host like, oh, 3 easy steps to get into your first flip. But like, there's not really like a lot of numbers behind it. Or like, I want to know, okay, that's great. You flipped, but what did you make? What was the profit on that? Is that something that is sustainable? So would you feel like that when you graduated college, or like what your generation is seeing, is it's easy?
Yes. Everyone is definitely saying that it's easy. And it almost feels a little scammy. Like I've seen certain things on Instagram or things like that, where it's like they're showing all these cool things they bought because they got into this real estate. And it's like, how are you doing that? But the easy steps, like it'll be like, oh, you have to buy my book to like understand it. And it's like, it just seems like all a scam, but they're all like my age. I'm like, how are we doing that?
And I see a lot of people who are doing the Airbnb arbitrage. They'll go to apartment buildings, they'll rent them, and then try and Airbnb them. And I think COVID has put a very false sense of comfort in people, because think of a pet. If you leave your pet in a cage for a while, when they get out, they get excited and they want to like go do a lot of different things. Basically, that's what we were the last 2 years of like locked in our house and not being able to go anywhere. I know that's a horrible analogy, but so everyone just like got so excited, like, oh, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to do that. So people are arbitraging or just getting all these short-term rentals and they're making so much money. But once like things go back to normal, probably in like 12 months, and now the economy is starting to settle and inflation and everything is just so expensive, it's like people aren't going to be able to make those trips or go there. And people who were buying all this real estate the last 2-3 years, basically are basing all their numbers or the revenue based off of kind of fictitious numbers. It's kind of like if you're a sports fan, say you're a Cleveland Brown fan, where they have one good year. It's like, ooh, tickets going to be expensive for that one good year, but they stink the next 25 years. That 1 year is an anomaly. I think that's kind of and sorry if I offend any Browns fans, but there's probably nobody who is a Browns fan. I don't think they actually exist, but yeah, I think people make it come out to be so easy, but it was the same thing roughly 15 years ago from 2004 to 2006, where like you could literally buy a house and 3 weeks later sell it for like 50 grand more. And people just kept doing that. And then all of a sudden the wool got pulled out from underneath them and everyone's house values dropped by like 30 or 40%. And then they're stuck. And I see people now on TikTok bragging like on the beach, oh yeah, I got 3,000 doors and 300 million in debt. And it's like, okay, because they're all using what's called DSCR loans, which are debt service credit ratio. It has nothing to do with you as a person. It's solely based off of the asset itself and how much revenue it's bringing in versus how much the expenses are to make sure you can pay the mortgage. But those loans can be called at any time. So if vacancies increase or they are not making that money to pay, they'll basically turn around and just call the loan. And that's what happened 15 years ago. And that created this part of another disaster. But that's the next thing that I think we're going to see issues with. And I'm sorry, I'm talking too much.
I was going to say, so in short,
yeah.
I was going to circle back to Airbnbs because that's also something I see everywhere. Like people putting all their like numbers on how many Airbnbs they have and like how many weeks out of the year that they're getting rented and all this money they're getting back. But I just feel like if it was that easy, everyone would do it.
So I kind of agree and disagree. Airbnb is an interesting concept. I think it's a sacrifice that some people like are totally willing and able to make, where they're either staying with parents and when they're Airbnb-ing, they're like moving around a ton. You know, I think at a certain stage in your life, if you can get in and you can Airbnb, But that's something like for us that I'm not willing to do. I'm not going to uproot my whole family just for a weekend to Airbnb my house. But I also think like what Chris said, there's like that false sense of security that's come from COVID. When it comes to short-term rentals and now with the market kind of rocky, short-term isn't where I would want to be right now. I had a question for you, Tony. So like when, and I'm letting you speak for your entire generation.
Sorry, everyone.
College graduates. I mean, we talked about like your goals personally and stuff, but like, what would you say are things you'd hope to learn when it comes to investing?
I think coming from college and not really understanding different types of investing, I thought like the only way to get into investing was like the stock market, and which is also another like scary thing to look at when you're just getting out of college and having money to start investing in the first place. So like my goals with investing when I was, which I am fresh out of college, is just like, I want to learn enough to be able to put my money somewhere that like I could have that passive income from. But I honestly was so like out of the loop, it kind of felt like, of, and my friends too, I can attest to that. Cause now that like I'm with you guys, they're like, you need to learn everything so that we know what to invest in. Like, it's crazy that so many college students and like fresh out of college students don't really know like where to even start. And so I think having other options besides like the stock market is like very beneficial, and more people need to know about it.
Yeah.
I was going to kind of roll into that because one of the things when I graduated college back in 1997.
I wasn't born yet.
So, they still had 401ks back then. They still had them. I think Roth like started right around that time. But for me, like I never heard of Roth until same thing, like 5 or 10 years ago. And by that time, I'm like, I'm too old now to put it in a Roth. So I just got to keep everything in my 401k. But what type of knowledge, just out of curiosity, like if at all, between high school, college, did they teach you about tax deferred income or 401ks, or do you learn that anywhere?
You really don't learn that anywhere. The only reason why I even knew it in college at all was because I had a summer job at my college. And when I got my paycheck, I saw part of it like went away. And so I was like, oh, that's going into your retirement. And I was like, okay. And that was my only thought. I never thought of it again. I didn't even like ask anyone about that. And I think another thing we should touch on is the difference between Roth and traditional. I know you guys have taught me that, but that was like 2 weeks ago. So I bet there's a ton of people that don't understand like, and
a whole two
I am
weeks
doing
ago.
Roth. I know. I am doing Roth because they all said, oh, I'm young enough. And if it's an age limit, like why aren't they telling us to start that one like immediately?
So Lauren, I'll let you define the difference because you're more familiar with them.
Because I'm younger?
That, and you have, I think you have one of each.
I do. Both of ours are traditional. So essentially the difference is with a Roth. So when you get a job, we'll start back a few steps. So most people, when you graduate, if you're being employed by someone, sometimes you have the option to opt into their employer-sponsored 401k plan. I remember when I first did it, you go through the whole like onboarding process at your company and you're supposed to fill out all this paperwork on like, oh, do I do a Roth 401k or a traditional 401k? And then you're supposed to like elect an amount that gets pulled out of your paycheck. So basically the difference is whether you want that amount pulled out pre-tax or post-tax. So what do I mean by that? I mean that when you elect to have a Roth 401k, the money is coming out post-tax. So you've already been taxed on that money that they're putting into your 401k account. And then if you choose traditional, that means that the money is not being taxed before it is put into your 401k account. Now, why does that matter? Well, it matters because when you retire or when you reach the age of, what is it, 59 and a half? Yes, 59 and a half, you can start using that money. If you have a Roth account and you've built it the whole way, you've already paid all your taxes on it. If you chose traditional, you then pay the taxes upon like disbursement of the funds. So essentially, in short, do you want to be taxed on that money now or do you want to be taxed on that money later? And then Chris, I'll let you speak to factors to consider. And I know you and I met with someone about what's best. So I'll let you kind of speak to why would someone choose a Roth and why would someone choose a traditional account?
Yeah. And for anybody who's younger, I think the Roth is absolutely the way to go because anybody who's kind of like turned on the news or goes to like, I think the World Debt Clock or something, whatever that website is, to see how much debt the US is in. We keep getting in more debt day by day. And the only way to decrease the debt is through either cutting costs, which government doesn't know how to do, or increase taxes, which they're very good at doing. So eventually we're going to have to pay the piper. So taxes are eventually going to have to go up. So if you're paying it now, the taxes, most likely in 35 years or 40 years, when Tony goes to retire or be able to take that money, hopefully you're retired well before then, but when you go to take that money, if the tax rates are much higher, hey, you've already paid that. You don't have to worry about that. For me, I've been putting...
What you see is what you get. So like whatever's in there is yours tax-free.
Yeah. So like for mine, I've always done the traditional 401k. So I haven't been paying taxes on it. So in 12 and a half years, when I go to pull that out, you're laughing. Tony will still be younger. I think Tony will still be younger than your age, like right now. So when Tony's like your age. Okay. When I go to pull that out, I'm going to be basically being taxed like I'm getting a paycheck. So I'll have to pay whatever my tax is. Hopefully at that time, I'm not also taking a salary because then I'd be in a higher tax bracket. That's one of the things people will try and defer that as much as possible to when they stopped working. So typically when you retire, you don't need as much money to live off of. So then you're taking it out hopefully at a lower tax basis than you're at like right now. So that's kind of, you're never going to win. Essentially, because you're always going to have to pay, but paying earlier, I think, is always better.
Yeah, I agree. I think when you're in the middle, I'll call myself in the middle. I know we spoke with someone who we're going to have on the podcast probably in a few weeks. We were asking this question for me, what makes the most sense when I was setting up my self-directed account? And he said at the end that they've done some studies on this. And at the end of the day, it kind of evens out because you're taxed on it sooner, you have less money to use to invest. So you're able to build it quicker, even though you're going to be taxed on it if you're in a traditional, whereas you may not be able to build it as quick. And I'm speaking in generalities, obviously, with a Roth, but you know that what you see is what you get come retirement age. So I thought that was pretty interesting of him to bring up.
It also really comes down to what you've invested in. It's some people might stay conservative entire life. Some people may be aggressive at a younger age. If you average 8% versus 12% for the first 5 years, that is going to be significant difference. And there's really no way to, I don't know anyone that goes back and analyzes, oh, I've only made this much in my 401k this year versus, oh, I could have made this much. So we talk about real estate investing and we talk about 401ks and stuff, but let's talk like even like a mortgage, like the terms of a mortgage with the payments. When I graduated college, I was looking at buying a car and I could get a really nice car for like 25 grand. But when I was looking at it, it was like 60 payments and the payments were like $600 a month and 60 months. I'm like, wait, I'm going to pay $36,000 for a $25,000 car. I'm like, I feel like I'm getting hosed, you know, because of interest. And then I realized the interest rate was only basically, it was like 6% or something at the time. Actually, it was $500 a month. So sorry, I was paying $30,000 for a $25,000 car. And I thought like interest, I was getting hosed. From that, like with a mortgage, typically you're going to pay double whatever you get. So if you get like a $500,000 mortgage, you're going to pay like over $1 million over the course of that loan. Has that ever been mentioned at all?
No, like I know the word interest, obviously, and I know what a mortgage is, just like living in a house with my parents. But I don't think that, I mean, I'm also an education major, I would like to disclaim. So maybe like the real estate investor, we don't have that major I use yet.
I don't think there is that major at most schools.
Yeah. Honestly, there's not a ton of options for like real estate type of things in undergrad. But anyway, I don't think that when I think of buying a house for like $900,000, I would think that's what I would be paying for over time. Like I would never think of like the interest.
At the end of the day, you're paying more.
Yes.
Yeah. To borrow the money. Well, Tony and I were talking and she had some questions for us, actually. So
there we go. Yeah.
Okay. I guess we can start with Chris. I just want to know like how you got to this space, because I think like advice on that is beneficial for people my age because it can be such a intimidating field to get into. And you said that you didn't even know what a note was till 2016. So that means you had all that time in your life before that of like doing however many other things you were doing. And I think it's refreshing to see other people's paths so that it's like, oh, they're a real person too. And like, they have good advice and knowledge.
I just like how you really, and did Lauren teach you, slow played the all that time in your life. Like that was good.
That was really good.
Okay. So I'll try and make this quick. I started working for a development company. So I used to work for a general contractor.
And then your background is in construction.
So I'm a civil engineer by degree and I work for a general contractor. I'm the guy in a white shirt and tie on a construction site that looks like they're doing nothing. That was my job. And it's the best way to explain it. So I started working for a real estate developer, and the guy I was working for pissed at me. He's like, well, what do you own for real estate? I'm like, my house and stuff. He's like, what? You don't have rentals or anything? I'm like, no. He's like, how are you going to retire? And then like you mentioned like the 40-40-40 rule. You work 40 hours a week for 40 years to basically take home 40% of your income. That's not going to be or live 40% of the lifestyle you used to live. So first my wife and I started buying rentals, but we had two little kids. That came too much. And my wife said, stop. Plus I had some health scares at the time. And the squirrel I am of like always trying to find that unique acorn was first started with tax liens, which I didn't know, but tax liens were boring to me. So everyone could do it. And I stumbled upon notes. And then I stumbled upon notes and realized there's not a lot of people doing it. And it's not easy. People will be like you said, the gurus, oh, I can do this. I got all this money. Here's my book. I'll teach you how. Wow, there's a lot of people that do that. I noticed a lot of people don't get involved in this because this business is conflict oriented. And me working on the general contractor side, we fought all the time with the contractors. I've been threatened to get thrown off buildings. So it's kind of very intense and you're yelling and screaming at people every day and deal with lawyers. So the note side of things of having to get a lawyer involved never scared me. And I think that is what pushes a lot of people away because in today's world, there's also a lot less conflicts. And I think people treat each other much more respectfully today than they did 15, 20 years ago. So kind of I fell into this niche and kind of just really enjoy what I'm doing.
So I was talking to someone earlier today and they were asking about licensing. So like when you read a book about notes, it's like buy notes, collect debt. But the person I was speaking with brought up a good point about you have to actually be licensed to collect debt. So like, how did you navigate, I guess, those rules and regulations and know what to do?
Because you said like, it is hard to do. So how did you get past all of that? And now it's like your whole business.
Yeah. Like when did you take off?
Yeah. So I used to be an introvert and very shy, believe it or not, Lauren, but I don't know what flipped the switch, but I ask. If I don't know something, the one thing I've always thought I was good at in kind of managing whatever job I was doing is I'd know where to go to get the answer. And that's really the key to being successful is you're not going to know everything. But if you know enough to get yourself in trouble, which is who to go to get the advice, but make sure it's somebody you trust to get the right advice. And that's really what it came down to is I'd spend the money to talk to my attorney to make sure we are going to do it right. A lot of people like to cut corners on things. For me, it was, hey, I want to do the right thing. And I'm more conservative in regards to that. So talk to the attorney and say, hey, I want to do this. How do I do it? And he'd give me the steps. And if I need to go do something, I'd figure out how to go do it or basically talk to somebody that's already been there and done that and use them as a resource to go get things like the licenses or just understanding of the note space because I know construction and housing and how much a house is worth. All the stuff that went before that of, you know, all these terms that were thrown at me of allonges and assignments and all of that, I didn't know any of that. And I'd sit there like trying to learn my difference when I was a little kid, like the left versus right hand. A allonge versus assignment, which one goes with which? It was almost like, which one's my left hand, which one's my right? And as kids, we didn't know you could just do this with your left hand and it's L for left. They didn't teach us that. So that's kind of really any advice I give somebody today is don't ask the question of how do you do something. If you do a little bit of research and say, hey, I was researching this and I saw this come up. Can you explain that to me? Because by showing that you've done a little bit of research, it gives you so much more credibility and people will want to help you. Just like when Lauren reached out to me, she sent me a voice video or voice text about notes. And so, yeah. I could play it if we want, but we'll refrain. But no, Lauren liked looking to learn more about notes and she had done a lot of due diligence and effort in the note space. And when she reached out, she had already knew enough that it was like, oh, this would be somebody I would enjoy working with because they've already done a bunch of research. So they would be easy to teach compared to somebody that just sits there and is like, show me everything or show me how to do notes. And it's like, okay, like I can't just show you how to do notes.
Well, I kind of know a little bit about like your background and going, I think Procore, AppFolio. Yeah. I don't know the order of any of that. Like what made you make the switch in industries? Cause I know that can't be like an easy hop.
Yeah. So I'm really good about talking about myself. So I'll start with that disclaimer. So I worked, like you said, I worked in tech for a really long time. My family's in real estate. They've always been in real estate. And like the oldest child I am, refused to be in real estate. And it was not until I had my oldest son that I started to be thinking about what life I want to provide him. Not just in terms of financial, because at the time, I don't know what it's like now, you could make really good money in tech sales. And financially, that wasn't the problem. But thinking about, okay, what kind of time do I want to be able to give my kids? And that coupled with for a year, like for one season, I helped coach a water polo team. And I look around and all these parents that were showing up to all the things own their own business or were in real estate or again, just had their own business. So I started with the, again, to avoid real estate, I started with owning my own business. So I did sales consulting and small business consulting. And then that was great, but I was still trading that like time and I had more flexibility, but it wasn't something I saw myself doing long-term. Enter COVID when I really got serious about real estate investing. Like at the, up until that point, I had experience in managing long-term rentals, helping acquire long-term rentals, flip long-term rentals, get them ready to rent out and then managing them from like a property management perspective. But notes was also new to me at that time in what, 2020. And I just do what I do and went kind of full speed ahead, 150%, and tried to learn as much, read as much, consume as much content and information as I could. And then reach out to people that resonated with me, whether it was how they shared the information, what their accomplishments were, or where I saw myself being. So I think for me, the change to shift this way was really like thinking about my kids, my family, and like what future and time-wise I want to provide for them. But I mean, also I will say COVID was like a great thing to give me that time mm-hmm. to do that.
One thing I'll just add to that is you don't need to copy somebody else's path. Create your own journey. Just because your friends are doing something one way or there's a norm of people you know following a certain path, just because they're doing that doesn't mean you have to follow that path. Sometimes if you go off on a little different path or do a little more research on something that you might be more interested in, it can actually lead you to a better place later on. So that's one thing I tell people is just because everyone's kind of doing something a specific way, doesn't mean you have to still follow them because what's right for one person might not be right for you.
The age old parent, if everyone's jumping off a bridge, are you going to jump off a bridge?
Yeah. That's only after you actually did something really stupid though, is when I would get that. So
kind of applies. But ironically, Tony, you've mentioned that like quite a few of your friends are actually moving into real estate at post-college.
Yes.
Which so, I find interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. And it's funny, Chris's point of like doing the same thing, because I have a group of best friends from college and like some of us were on the exact same major, taking the same classes, like literally doing everything the exact same. And that's always like what I thought I was going to do. And then
which was teaching.
And then once like my senior year hit and I was a TA for a quarter, which, and I love doing it, but I was like, this is like kind of brutal. Like everyone, my dad, like there's a ceiling you're going to hit working for government stuff, whatever. So I was like, okay, like, I guess I just won't be doing what my friends are doing. It's so scary. And then when I stopped, it was so crazy because then two of my other closest friends that I've told you about, we all kind of found ourselves like going more towards real estate. And I was like, okay, well, it's not as scary as you'd think because like you have people that are kind of doing the same thing as you, but it's like in a different way. Like I have one friend who's going to go work for her dad and that's like commercial real estate.
It's commercial.
And then my other best friend is working for like, she's just getting her foot in the door in like BlackRock stuff, which is all like when we all talk, we all have things in common, but we're also doing things like differently. So it's really nice to hear like their perspectives as well as mine, because we're all doing things in the same industry that no one even tells you about in college. Like Paige and I were sitting down and we were like a year ago, like, what are we going to do? Like teacher, lawyer, doctor. Like that's what they teach you in college. Like
teacher,
that's all you can do. There's nothing else. We were just saying like, how crazy was it a year ago? We were talking about that. And then a year later, it's like, these things kind of just like fall into your lap, not fall into your lap. It's my dad always said, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And that's just very true in this industry specifically, I think. So I think like networking might be, I know I've been here for 2 weeks, but my biggest advice for like people that are younger than me would be like networking as much as you can and like making sure you're making good connections with.
It is interesting because I was going to say like when you get ready to graduate college. I remember I was going into my last semester. And so I was a civil engineer. So basically we design things that aren't supposed to move. That's the simplest way. So I'm sitting there like thinking about, I was taking class on structural engineering, like designing bridges and stuff. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, do I want to sit in a cube for the next 40 years, literally just on a computer designing freaking a bridge? And every bridge is basically pretty much probably going to be very similar, or a building. And it's like different bridge shapes and sizes. Yeah. And it's like, okay. And basically we do like geotech stuff, which is like, okay, we learn about dirt. Okay. And characteristics of dirt, really exciting stuff. If, as I can tell by look on your face, you look very, you know, amused. But then it hit me. I'm like, I don't want to do that. So that's when I literally the last, you know, we went by quarters, not semesters, but the last two quarters flipped and like, oh, I'm looking into construction management because that's a little cooler and you get to go visit sites and you're doing something kind of new every year to 3 years. And it's interesting, like you said, just remind me when you said teacher, doctor, lawyer.
Yeah, I think that your 2 week advice is good advice just to network. And we had a whole episode on this. So obviously everyone knows how passionate I am about that. But even if you do find yourself, say you had been teaching or gone that route, you still have the time to network outside of that. So for people who are looking to get started, you don't have to start in real estate. Like you don't have to join a real estate investment firm or become a real estate agent. There's a lot of ways to educate yourself, even without like buying an ebook or going to a mentor or guru outside of your full-time job. That'll give you knowledge. And then you take that knowledge and ask questions of people.
I had a question back to you, Tony. How did you explain your job to your parents, like what we do?
And what was their reaction?
Yeah.
I've actually been wanting to ask this podcast for a bit now.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because right before Lauren called me, I had like the fourth or fifth person text me about becoming my old high school's water pool coach and pool manager. And I was about to throw my phone against the wall. And then my mom was like, you should just do it so that you're like doing something while you're looking for something else to do. And I was like, no, like I refuse. So then when Lauren came to me and I was like explaining to my mom, like what this was, and what it was, I didn't really know. I was like, well, they like invest. Like, I didn't really talk about the note as much because I didn't know what that was, but I went more mortgage route. And I was like, they do something with like investing with your mortgage. Like, let's look it up. Like, we're Googling things. We're like on the website. I told you I listened to the podcast. I'm like, I took notes on the podcast.
She did. She showed up to her interview with her notes
because I was like,
yeah, I remember you mentioning that. And you're like, yeah, wow, this woman came prepared.
Yeah, I was like, man,
not even prepared.
It's a casual lunch conversation to start. Like, let's see how it goes.
I wasn't even like prepared. I should look back at my notes. I'm like, why? But I like took notes. I tried to explain to my parents, like they're investors. What did I say? It was something investors. And they were like, that's super broad, but like, whatever, like run with it. Like just do something, because I was so against like coaching, teaching, going back to my own high school, no hate to my high school or any of that. I just was so far past that. And I was like, I don't think that will boost me to like where I want to go if it's outside of this. So I think I was just explaining to them more like, I just want to do something else. Why not try it? And back to networking, they were super down for it because the person that introduced Lauren and I is like one of my lifelong best friends. Our parents are best friends. They do vacation together, like all of that. So I think it was also back to the networking side of like why they reacted just like, yeah, sure, like go for it. And they've always made me shoot for the stars like my whole life with sports and everything. So I think when my sports career was over, they wanted me to like have something to be passionate about again. So they really didn't care. But I definitely did not explain it to them well at all. I probably still couldn't explain it super in depth, but that is why we have the podcast and why we have the website, because then I literally will quote the website.
Have your parents listen to a podcast?
That's a good question. My dad's a podcast listener. My mom's not. So I should ask him if he has, but I do have a couple people that have. My friend Sarah has listened to it. And I think that's about it, because we told her she should be on the podcast. So she wanted to listen, but I should make everyone.
I agree.
I'll send it out.
Well, now they're going to have to listen because you're actually on the podcast.
Yeah, maybe not this episode.
Okay, I'll blast it out for you.
Yeah.
I'll conveniently not post this one.
So again, it's only been 2 weeks, but what has been kind of like the biggest aha moment in either working here or just, I mean, you've only been working 2 weeks in your whole professional career. Most people who've probably only been in a career for 2 weeks aren't on a podcast and stuff, but
I will say, like, I'm super impressed that you were like, yeah, sure, I'll do it. Because Chris had this idea, like, before you were even brought on, like maybe the Friday before you started, he's like, yeah, let's have Tony on the podcast, like 2 days in. I was like, let's give her like a month. And then I think I asked you and you're like, sure.
Well, Lauren did warn me before, I think before I even started working. She was like, Chris is really going to push you out of your comfort zone. Like, he's made me do this, this, and this. And so I honestly,
like, I was
prepared to do it the first week. I was like, okay, maybe I'll have to do it. Like, even my friends were like, you're going to be on podcast, right? And I was like, maybe, I don't know yet. And then once you'd asked me, I wasn't surprised like at all.
We'll talk offline about the other things Lauren said about me. We can have a conversation on that. And so, but, and again, it's only been 2 weeks, but just in corporate America or just anything in general, because it's your first experience, has there been anything that has been very different or like, wow, I didn't realize this or that, just out of curiosity? And it might not be anything, but I was just curious if there was.
I mean, I feel like I can only speak on like our company in general, because I think my thoughts on corporate America were very like, you sit at your desk 9 to 5 and that's what you do. And I don't even know what people do all day on their computers in corporate America, but like being here, it's very like Lauren and I still chat a little bit. Like we get up, we'll like go do something like in between getting everything done. And I think that was like something I was so shocked about. Like I was fully prepared to have to like just sit here all day. But then again, I feel like I'm only speaking about us. Maybe other people can have that same thought. But yeah, no, other than that, I was just like very pleasantly surprised that your work-life balance is very good as long as we're getting our things done.
Ask your friend that's working for BlackRock or whatever, Blackstone.
Oh, I have already.
I would think they're so back funny. To the 9 to 5 would be a short day for them probably. And they are in front of that computer all day long. Oh, corporate America. Yeah. It's unfortunate that, most people spend literally the entire day in their own little world in front and some offices. And it really depends. Each company's culture is very different. But some company culture is like, hey, they don't even want you like going to mingle, like the water cooler talk. Some companies don't even like that. Every company I work for, thankfully, has been cool with stuff like that. But I know people work at companies that literally they just sit in their cube all day long and just plug away. And it's not fun.
I know, like some of my expectations when I decided I wasn't going to the teaching industry was like, do I want to sit at like a desk all day, like a cubicle, like you were saying? Like, that just sounds miserable. And then how do you have a life outside of that? Like, you're just going to be so tired and drained and I don't know, pale and just out of shape, everything. Cause I was like, I've always been so active and like always doing things. And I was like, how will I have time to like find my passions outside of work if I'm stuck like that all day?
Instead, you're on a treadmill.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a good point, though. I think a lot of people, recent graduates, might think that and might not be in a similar position as us here at 70, where we do have that work-life balance and kind of that you're an adult, we trust you to do your job kind of mentality. But the thought of when am I going to have time to look into real estate? When am I going to have time or energy to learn how to invest or what I should be investing in? I think, would you say that comes up a lot for people your age?
Yeah, I think my age, it's more like, where do you start with investing? So okay. I was going to segue into like, I know we go more towards the older crowd, but I know like with this $500 minimum, you could easily hit younger people. But I think a scary thing with investing is like, how do you just like invest and start? Like if I have $1,000, do I go to you and I say, here's $1,000? Yeah. Like, how does that whole thing work?
So I'm just curious because you're in a generation where Bitcoin over the last several years has been huge and a lot of young people have a little more comprehension for it. And I think are willing to take a little risk on it. So people, like you said, had $1,000 and you hear friends triple their money on Bitcoin in 3 weeks. And it's like, oh, I can take $1,000 or $3,000. Or you look at our fund and be like, oh, wait, I'm going to get like you're offering potentially 8%. Bitcoin will triple my money in 3 months. It's going to take me 9 years to triple my money or whatever case may be. So I'm curious if you've heard things like that or not heard things, but if people kind of have that mentality of, hey, I'm young, I got some money, let me just throw it at something that could kind of like red or black on a roulette wheel and you win or not win.
Yeah, I mean, Bitcoin was a huge thing. Like, I remember our freshman year of college, there was this person we knew in college. He had to pay for it all himself, and he ended up getting enough money to pay for 4 years of college through Bitcoin in like a couple weeks. And we were all like, that's just like insane. And I think it was so insane that none of us even looked into it because we were like, we don't know how to do that or start that. So I think if you're not in finance at all, I think all of it is scary, even Bitcoin and I don't know, cryptocurrency. Is that what Bitcoin is?
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't think my generation wants to be like as risky anymore because of, maybe this is more personal, just my generation, but like my parents during the recession, like struggled a lot. And so I was like, well, I don't want to be throwing my money at this because like everything's going to crash and then I'll have no money. So I think for me personally, it's more of, I just don't want to be mindless about it. Mm-hmm. And that's why like maybe real estate is more stable than like crypto or stock market. But that might not be a generational thing. That just might be like my own personal issues that I had when I was younger.
Well, it's kind of like comes down to kind of what you both touched on. Like, are people, you were looking for a quick win or are you looking for like long, steady growth in like an asset class that typically does really well and historically does very well? I think kind of that's, if I was to talk to someone who had $1,000 and was looking to get started, I think I would want to know like, okay, what is your goal for this $1,000? If it's to make $100,000 overnight, like you should probably go look at, I don't know what you're going to do with that money. But if you're looking to start investing for your future self, and I'm not even saying like 60 or like 59 and a half, I'm just saying not 1 year from now. If you're willing to put something in for like a long-term growth, that it's a good place to start. I mean, you asked about the stock market versus real estate and cryptocurrency. And like, Chris, I mean, I guess you can better answer that because you've seen a few more cycles than us. But what would you say would be the biggest difference between the three?
Yeah, I mean, crypto is its own animal. And for me, I'm not a believer at this point in time. I'm more of a, it's a greater fool's theory, meaning that you're buying it, hoping that somebody's going to give you more money for it because it's not backed by anything. It's just an asset. And I know people will compare that to the US dollar, but the US dollar has 300 million people paying taxes. And last time I checked, they own a lot of land as well as oil, gas, and a lot of other things. So there's that with crypto. Real estate versus stocks, I would just tell people to have a balanced portfolio. You shouldn't go all in one or all in the other. Real estate is a fixed asset. It's some tangible. You can feel it, touch it, see it. You can also invest in Apple stock. Apple's a company that makes a lot of products. So, you know, most of us have an iPhone. You can hold that and say, hey, I invest in this company that produces. If you know who Warren Buffett is, he's 90 something years old now, but he always tells people investing something that generates something, whether you're investing in farmland that produces goods that people buy or real estate that people can live in. That's really one of the major things that he's always based it off of, and he's done extremely well from that. I don't take a dig between stocks and real estate because there's a time and a place for both. I don't understand stocks in the sense of I understand them, but I don't have the patience for stocks. Like I can't watch like the market every day and see what's going on. And I know you're supposed to leave it in there, but there should be things that you might want to do with it where real estate's more of a long play slow. You know, you got a house there. Okay. You got to paint it every 10 years or whatever the case may be, but the house ain't going anywhere. The market around it could change, but that's not going to happen overnight where something happens where there's a world crisis and all of a sudden, or Elon Musk tweets something and his stock goes down 30% and you're losing 30% of that stock because of one guy does one tweet. So each one has their positives and negatives. And that's why you always want to kind of keep money in different buckets and balance a portfolio.
But would you say one is more stable than the other, or is it just too different?
I mean, if you looked at for over a long period of time, they're basically almost identical. I think like if you look at any like 30 year period of time, basically the returns between each one is going to be between, I think like 8 and 9%. Real estate has better tax benefits because it's a depreciating asset. So it has better tax benefits. You can be more creative with real estate because you can do things called like a 1031 exchange, which is roll any taxes owed down the line. Real estate, like we're in notes, we're in a different type of asset class, but real estate's got many different avenues to it where with stocks, it's now you can buy stocks. I know you can buy options and things, or you can short stocks. And there's some creative ways you can do things with stocks as well. But it's really also somewhat of a personal preference. I think people look at real estate, excuse the phrase, but kind of like the sexier lifestyle of, ooh, I own real estate. It's more of a talking point at dinner with somebody. It's like, oh, great. Yeah, you own 50 shares of this. Who cares? But you say, oh, yeah, I bought this house on here that's got like this really cool Victorian look to it, or a nice covered porch. Like people are like, ooh, people, I think, latch on to real estate more than they would if you were talking about, if you're having dinner with somebody and you're talking about your stock portfolio or real estate portfolio, I think people would be a lot more interested in your real estate than your stocks. That's me, but I don't know.
I mean, I don't have the stats. I'm like, oh, if you look back 30 years, they're about even. I just feel like most of the people in my life, related and unrelated, outside of like the stock that has come from someone working at a company pre-IPO, I'd say most people get wealthy through real estate in what I've seen and who I'm surrounded by. And so for me, I would choose real estate over stock.
So here's a question I asked both of you. What was your favorite board game as a kid?
We're talking Monopoly. I hated that. It took forever. Okay.
So that was where I was going to. Like,
Monopoly, I knew it had something to do with Monopoly. So,
like Monopoly. I loved Monopoly. Yeah, it took a long time. Stratego was another one I liked. But Monopoly is basically you're buying real estate. I mean, you're trying to conquer certain areas to put hotels on it and then crush your person by taking all their money from them. But that's basically what Monopoly is. And again, it's a game that most people don't realize. It's like, it's a game about real estate.
That would not ever have popped into my head ever.
I mean, I did know, I hated how long that game took. I did have another question. You maybe touched on it a little bit, but I know like the recession was when I was younger, like 2007, 2008. And I know like we're kind of in that again with like how the housing market is going. So if it were to like fully crash like it did, how would that affect mortgage notes and all of us?
Well, I was going to say when it comes to like the notes that we're buying, most of what's happening now will not really be things that would become available to us for a few years. Like what we're looking at as far as assets are because of 2007, 2008. Correct.
Yeah. It's a very slow drip, meaning that when something happens like to housing today, it's a slow drip to make its way down to us. But what's different with what we invest in is if the real estate market crashes and people lose their jobs, do you think there'd be more or less people paying their mortgage?
Less.
Yeah. So that would mean there'd be more product for us. So we'd have more opportunities to buy assets.
That was my thought behind it, but I didn't know if there was like a deeper
side. Yeah. It's also a different pause of the recession this time than last time. Last time it was people were being qualified for homes they had no purpose of buying, which led a lot of people to having to default on their loan.
So next question is like the question they say, like, how many tennis balls would it take to fill a bus? I don't know if you've ever been asked any of those questions. But the next one, and again, I don't expect you to know this answer, but there's two questions. Can you guess how big the mortgage market is in the United States? And then how big the distressed mortgage market is from a dollar value? Any idea? If you took everybody's mortgage in the US, what would it total?
I have no idea.
Billions.
It has to be billions.
I think it's either 12 or 16 trillion.
And then the distressed mortgage market.
Yeah.
Which is separate, or are we taking that?
No, it's separate.
Only the ones that are distressed.
Only the ones that are 90 days or more behind.
Guess? Millions?
Oh, no, still billions.
Still billions?
So it's about 500 to 600 billion. So, and I say that because it's usually floats between like 3 and 6% of the overall market of like, so 15 trillion times 3 to 6% is 450 to 900 billion. The reason I mentioned that is we're looking to raise 75 million. So 75 million out of like 600 billion is such a small drop in the bucket. So any major changes in the economic environment will have some impact on the number of loans and some impact on pricing. But based off of where we're at, it's not like we're going to be like partying in the street, like people are begging us to buy their loans. We'd actually get back to a normal environment where the pricing's been a little higher over the last few years. So we'd probably be able to get things for a little more discount because people want to move it from their books.
Yeah, I'd say what happens in the market is a leading indicator of what will happen in the mortgage.
How much is like a distressed mortgage note to buy than like a regular one? Like
performing versus a non-performing?
Yeah, I should have known those words. I heard you say those.
Let's take a $100,000 note that if they're paying their mortgage, you'd still be able to get that at a discount. It might be anywhere from like 85 to 95 cents. So you'd be at $85,000 to $95,000 is what you pay. if it was non-performing, you'd pay anywhere probably between $40,000 and $65,000. So big difference, which does allow us by doing that, allow us to try and work something out with that person to try and keep them in their house.
And are there like bad mortgage note people that like just want to kick people out of their houses?
Yes.
Great question. Because I, circling back to what my parents say, I feel like my dad brought that up. And I was like, Dad, I don't know. Like, I'm just meeting someone for lunch now. Yeah.
Interesting thing about that is if you buy it at the right price, it's a win-win situation for everybody.
If you work out with the borrower.
If you work out with the borrower, and actually most likely would be a better return on an investment for you as the lender if you keep them in the house. So
the goal is to have you back in a year and we can see how much more, how many more questions you have for us.
I was just going to say in a year's time. So your assignment for the year from now is learn what fractional lending is. And if you want your mind to explode, there you go.
I don't, but okay.
Which I don't. Fractional lending. No. All right.
So, banks create money out of thin air is what it is. It'll blow your mind.
With that, thank you guys so much for joining us today on this episode of the CWS podcast. If you enjoyed the show, share it with a friend, subscribe, or leave us a review. Till next time.
Thank you. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining Lauren and I on this episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. Each week, we bring you expert education, experience, and information in a digestible format to help you identify investment opportunities so you can build wealth through real estate and take action toward your financial goals. Enjoy the show. Share with a friend or subscribe to the show and leave us a review.